every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM. Because business matters.
So thanks to everybody for coming today to Business Matters. We are very lucky to have with us Phil Bidwell from Handelsbanken, the Swedish bank, which he'll explain more about in a few minutes. And the session title was about how to not upset, or how to keep your bank manager happy. Corporate bank manager, I'm trying to think about here, rather than necessarily personal bank manager, but we'll see how the conversation goes. So, Phil, do you want to give us a quick sort of run through on your career?
Certainly.
First of all, maybe, and then we'll go on talk a little bit about the bank and then go on from there.
Okay, well, firstly, Stephen and everybody, thank you for the invite. It's a pleasure to be here. My career, I'm a Luton boy, born and bred, and went to McNeill High School way back in the late 70s, early 80s. A little spell at Sixth Form College, well, 2 years there. So came away with a selection of O-levels and an A-level. And I kind of fell into banking, really. Some friends of mine had also joined the banks, and so I sent my CV off probably just before I was finishing my A-levels to all the high street banks, in the days when you had to write out the letter every time. There was no emails going on back then. This would have been 1986 for reference for you. So and then through the replies and interviews that I got, cutting it very short, I was offered a position to start with Barclays in London, in the city. Just joining the high street bank at a time when each branch would probably take in maybe 10 or 12 new entrants every year. And I suppose you could kind of look at it that it's a little bit like the apprenticeship schemes of today. So you joined the bank, you literally learnt how the bank worked from working in what we call the machine room, where all the checks and paper vouchers were physically processed, and the famous line of tearing up the statements, which was literally you would get the statements printed on
very... Check that everybody knows here what we mean by a bank statement.
Get them on phones now, but...
Yeah, well, in this day, they came in a paper format, and we literally had to...
I still have my paper. I still have your paper.
Ah, excellent. It's always good.
I do, because, sorry, digress for a second, but it's slightly relevant and quite ironic that whenever you move house, and I moved house 3 years ago, for various reasons, you need proof of address. You know, when you sign up for a new electricity company or something like that. And computer-based bank statements do not count. You have to get physical ones. So I had stopped getting paper ones.
A lot of people
have. Thinking, you know, well, I want those anymore. I can access them online.
Yeah.
And then I got terribly frustrated having to ask my bank, which was Lloyds, different bank, I need some paper ones to give to the council or for council tax or whatever it is to prove who I am for all these anti-money laundering regulations. So it's quite ironic. But
yeah.
Anyway, there we go.
So they're making a comeback. So, from the literally splitting the statements and sending them out to customers, then a spell on the till, actually, you know, as most people would think of a bank, you know, going into a banking hall and going up to see a cashier, paying in checks and drawing money out. So I had a spell doing that. And then as time moved on, got to the more interesting bits of getting involved and actually lending money. And that's where, you know, you realise the skills of working out who's going to repay you and who you thought was going to repay you, but turns out that they can't. So some very valuable lessons in the early days there. And that was then moving through personal lending and moving on to how we take security. So for example, someone that's buying a house and the bank is giving them a mortgage, and obviously the mortgage being the legal charge over your property. So learning about how we go about that, and fortunately not having to learn about how we actually do repossess any homes. I was lucky through the late 90s when all that was happening, that I didn't get involved in any repossessions, I'm pleased to say. But from there, after a spell in regional office as a lending analyst there, I became a small business manager looking after a portfolio of around about 200 businesses that would range from startups through to freelance photographers, designers, let's see who else, we had a small plumbing firm, a couple of builders merchants, and this was down in the city of London, and again a great way of actually really being able to understand customers. And the key difference of those that will tell you what they're going to do and whether they would do it, and those that were probably just trying to have you over, get some money, and then you'd not see them again for some time. So again, a real valuable learn in understanding people, which I think ultimately is a key part of banking, is being able to get on with people and understand the clients. But after a spell of 4 or 5 years as a small business manager, I moved into the next tier up, which is what we term the mid-corporate market, looking after bigger companies, and then focused towards those that operated in the retail and wholesale sector, and then latterly in the manufacturing and logistics type firms. And again, exposure to some very interesting business, and also some very interesting individuals that run those companies. That took me through to 2014, at which point Barclays were offering voluntary redundancy, and after 28 years there, I thought, this seems interesting. So I decided to take the money and run. I had some time out where I worked with one of my old customers for a little while, who helped people sell their businesses. He'd been a customer of mine for 15 years, so I did some work with him. And then I was talking with Handelsbanken along the way, who are a Swedish bank that have been around for 150 years now. And an opportunity came up to join the Luton branch as one of the corporate managers there. Now, I'd never be negative toward Barclays. It was a great career. They looked after me and allowed me to do a lot of good things along the way. But Handelsbanken are a different approach. We are focused around the relationship side of the business. None of the managers are target driven, so we're in a space of, we can do what is right for the client in the first instance.
And Handelsbanken just banks businesses, it doesn't have.
We do business and personal banking. And it's quite a nice approach, because we've got 200 odd branches across the UK, and the way we work
contrast
is.
Contrast that with how many branches on a Barclays would have closed.
Oh, Barclays would have somewhere like probably about 2,500, 3,000, I suppose. So we've got a branch in most of the major cities, key towns, and you know, it's we just look after clients within our local area. So my patch, if you like, is Luton, Dunstable, Leighton, Buzzard, and because we're not targeted and chasing our own internal targets, if someone comes to me and that's got an introduction for a good company in Milton Keynes, I'll pass that across to the guys that we know over there. I'm not going to try and do it, because it's good for Phil Bidwell himself. So it's a good place to work, and it also gives me the opportunity to use all the skills that I've developed over the 30 odd years of I can actually sit in front of a customer, and if we like the proposition and the deal, we can shake hands and I can agree the lending for them,
whereas, which is different to my experience of I've never done any business with Handelsbanken, but with other banks, the more traditional way is, you know, the business wants to borrow £1 million or whatever it happens to be, the relationship manager will say, yeah, that's great, you know, fill in all these forms and, you know, here's the fee and well, this is how much it's going to cost. But by the way, it's got to go to the credit committee. It's usually called the credit committee, which is a separate bunch of sort of guys who are independent from the relationship manager. And they would analyse it in various ways in terms of the risk and so on. And they're the ultimate...
Yeah, so if you like, I'm both poacher and gamekeeper rolled into one, in that, you know, we want to be doing business, but likewise I need to make sure that if I'm lending money to a client, that, you know, I'm doing it the right way, and not just because I feel, you know, pressured to do so, or, you know, it seems like a good idea. We still have to, you know, give consideration to all the reasons we would as to why we should lend the money, but we have got the ability to do so ourselves.
Okay, so I'll do these in threes. For a business person coming to you, let's say it's starting up a new business, for example, an ex-business school student or whatever, who's got a great idea on a new business or something.
Like a what, good table.
Hmm? The two, yeah, somebody makes good tables, that's right,
yep.
Exactly.
I did look after a table manufacturer once.
What would be the three sort of key things that you would be looking for when you met that person for the first time, for example?
You know, there needs to be a good idea for the business, and the ones that I've generally seen succeed are ones where someone has clearly got a passion and understanding and an interest in that particular field. And a lot of people, you know, a little bit like me falling into banking, will have been down a career route, and then needs force them into doing a certain thing. But if there's an interest, a passion, a real understanding, I think that is absolutely key. I think the need to be commercial is absolutely important, because, you know, you can be great at designing a table, but if your table is actually costing you a huge amount in raw materials, in actual manufacturing process, and then you can't sell it at a price that is going to be competitive or that people are going to pay for, it might be a fantastic table, but if there's no market for it, then you're not going to make any money. So it's the need to be commercial. And I would also say, in terms of it's got to be the belief in yourself that you're going to do it. And whether that's through not taking a big salary from the business, or how much capital you're prepared to invest into the business in the outset, like a lot of the successful entrepreneurs will say, you know, you've got to sort of own this and take the chances yourself. If you just think, I'll set up a business, I'll get the bank to lend me some money, and you're not putting anything into it, I'd kind of be asking, so where's your stake in this? You know, we're not just going to, you know, take a bet on you. There has to be what we always used to refer to as some hurt money in the business. So, i.e., if you lose that, it's going to hurt. So money that you've physically saved, you're withdrawing from your deposit account to get your business up and running, that's your share capital, and that's what you've got to protect and grow. And, you know, don't treat it lightly. So, you know, be very passionate about what you're going to do, be commercial, and be prepared to really own it. And an element of just, as you've said just there, you know, it is risk, manage it well.
Reminds me of Mark Cuban. Do you know who he is? Mark Cuban? He's the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and he actually put his house up for a mortgage.
Yeah.
You know, he took a mortgage on his own house to get a loan for his own company. And for a very long time, he was just feeding himself on, you know, bread and water, and that wasn't, and it's just the idea of putting yourself through so much just to succeed.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, you know, that as an old school banker, I will have you know, I'll always have the utmost respect for anyone that's running their own business. You know, it can be a very tough and lonely world out there. But likewise, those that are prepared to make real sacrifice in doing so and taking a long-term view on it, you know, they're the ones that are working hard and deserve the success.
You're listening to Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM.
You were saying about the manufacturing costs and for a certain product. It's easy for companies to do that. You know, it's easy for, say, for example, off the top of my head, Sony manufacture the third model of the PlayStation, the PS3. They manufactured it from 2006 and only around 2009, 2010, they started making profit out of it.
Yeah.
Same thing for Austin. Every Mini that they sold was sold at a loss.
Yeah.
And what exactly? And Ford bought a Mini, disassembled it, and reverse engineered and thought, how are they doing this? How are they making money out of this? They weren't.
Yeah.
So it's easy for big companies to do that, but then with individuals, they can't take that risk.
That's right. Yeah, you've got to you know, treat your capital with respect.
And to that point, it was part of my essay. I was reading this book, and it was saying your cost is where you get your profit rather than your price.
But then, if you undercut it too much, you'll have a lower quality product, and then people won't like it.
That's true. But it was saying, you know, because it was an essay about pricing, so it was about how prices aren't necessarily based around your costs. Your profit comes from how you maintain your manage your costs.
Yeah, it's good. So what you're saying is the pricing depends on, you know, you've got to, let's go back to our example of tables. Clearly there's thousands of table manufacturers and tables in the marketplace, so there's a sort of prices are sort of set for what they're going to be, and then it's a question of have you got a revolutionary way of manufacturing that or sourcing materials that makes it significantly cheaper than the others, that either you can price at the same price and make a much better profit margin, or you can undercut them in terms of retail price and still make a healthy margin. Yeah, so I think that's a good point. We've got someone signed up, if you like. You've lent them some money.
Yep.
What can you, as a bank manager, bring to the business, you know, over and above the provision of the finance in the first place, sort of thing,
okay,
to help that entrepreneur succeed?
Okay, there's you know, unfortunately over the years I have seen businesses that haven't been successful, and so they're always stories that stick with you, and you know, worth imparting on people, that you know, it's when someone comes in with a business plan for a new idea, there's generally lots of excitement about the idea and very little of what could possibly go wrong and cause the business problems. And whilst we'd like to think that we live in a world where everything's all going to be good, unfortunately that won't always be the case. So I think there's you know, it's one of the hardest parts of the job, actually, is trying to manage some people who will only ever see the upside of what they're trying to do without actually considering, you know, what the pitfalls could be, and whether that would be continually investing their own money into a product that is not selling, or if they're employing people who aren't actually doing a good job for them. I can think of a food wholesaler that looked after some while ago, and their general sales manager had got quite an influence over the FD and the MD, and was for always going on about how much he was selling for the business, but what they weren't really paying attention to was what the actual contribution was on the bottom line. And so yeah, he was great at selling product, but he wasn't actually selling it at a price that meant they were making any money, which combined with a financial director who character-wise wasn't strong, meant that not only was he selling it to companies at a price that was too low, but the finance director wasn't working hard enough on collecting that money in. So the debtor days, to use the technical term, was getting higher and higher, as in the money that was owed to them, and they weren't actually working hard enough to get that money in. So that was then stifling the business of cash. Now, from our side, trying to explain to the owner, who, you know, had got good relationship with the FD and the sales manager, and he'd known them a lot longer than us, but from our side we could see where the problems were lying, and, you know, having to impart that to the owner and manager is something that wasn't a nice thing to do, but it's you know, we had to do it.
You're listening to Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM.
So
you would have said, you do realise, you know, whatever the chap's name was, you do realise that you're selling these products at too low a margin or a negative margin, and do you realise that the customers aren't even good quality in as much as they're not paying on time or whatever. So yeah. You were having to sort of, don't know what I would call the finance director's job for him.
Yeah, sort of sometimes you're almost spelling out the observation that, you know, some people that are running companies aren't necessarily as close to what's going on in the business as they should be. And, you know, that was an instance where the sales manager was telling the owner what he thought he wanted to hear, that, you know, we're doing great here, we're supplying this supermarket, that firm, yet he was doing so at a price that wasn't making them money, and even if they were going to make some money, they weren't actually bringing the cash in quickly enough. So, you know, you can also be profitable as a business, but if the cash isn't there,
absolutely,
then it's a big problem. So yeah. Sometimes it's just anecdotal information,
yeah,
like that, of what we've seen over the years. Likewise, I looked after a small company that was working as a legal draftsman with firms of solicitors, and was absolutely meticulous in how he was running his accounts and his billing process, but again was doing nothing to actually get the money paid in, you know, and he was focusing on the wrong areas. So sometimes it is just, you know, it feels like common sense in some ways, but it's just making sure that people have got the, you know, the overall view of what they need to be.
What about on the side where the business is strong, you know, it is growing, and you know, they're running the business pretty well. What can the, you know, someone in your position add to that to you know, improve things even more?
Well, that could be a combination of things, whether it's through introduction of other professional contacts that we have. So, you know, making sure they're working with a you know, the local Chamber of Commerce if they're looking at exporting, or UKTI. We might have instances where the business that we're dealing with has outgrown the one-man band accountant that had looked after them in the early days, and that's not to say they're not looking after them anymore, but there's a need for, you know, some more professional help. So again, it's sort of who we know that you can bring to the table as well, that's always very helpful. Likewise, through how the business expands, what levels of funding it might require. So, you know, that might be the introduction of, say, invoice discounting that enables people to borrow against the money that is owed to them from the sales they've made. You know, that is typically a good means of funding for a fast-growing company. So it's looking at the different scenarios of how you can help the growth along the way.
Right.
It sounds like you guys need a lot of pondering to actually do a massive decision like that. From what you said, it sounds like you need to have analysts and people who can do, you know, insight on what's going to happen. That obviously wouldn't be just down to one person, would it? You need a massive team to do that, wouldn't you?
Well, in the high street banks, as Stephen had said, you know, I was there as a relationship director on the front line with the client. I would be responsible for sort of shaping up a deal, and then getting other people to pull together a credit paper, if you like, that would involve analysis of the company's past performance, current performance, and then looking at some of their forecasting as well. And then a credit team taking another view on that as well. My role at Handelsbanken now, I'm kind of a little bit of all of that rolled into one. So I'll see the client. I'm able to make the decision to a certain level myself, but likewise, I have to be able to document that decision. I can't just sort of sit in front of someone and say, you know, I get on with them, they like us, we quite like the business, there's the money. You know, I've still got to make assessment of their accounts, their balance sheet. You know, is their plan reasonable? If we're lending them this much money, how's that going to affect their cash flow, their profits? So part of my job will be both, you know, the managing the relationship with the client, keeping them happy, but likewise when I'm back at the office, I'll be poring over the numbers and writing the credit report, which sometimes will be sanctioned by myself, and then sometimes that will be going up another level for someone else to be looking at it and sign that off for me. But in those situations, you know, we're only pushing applications forward that we know are going to be sanctioned. You know, I wouldn't be sending something up just to be getting it back with a feel this isn't happening.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't just be, you know, you had to be very cold headed and, you know, actually think of just the numbers and not.
Well, there's. I think a good example I could have way back in the late 90s was a charity that I was looking after. And they wanted to produce a load of merchandise for the year 2000 and the, you know, the millennium and all that. So they approached me with a request for borrowing some money to, you know, it was just branded products, mugs and plates and all this sort of thing. But they actually, their first plan was to come to me and ask for a loan over 5 years. And this was in tail end of 1999. For products that probably only got a lifespan of maybe a few months at the beginning of the year 2000, and then they wanted to be paying it back over another 5 years. So, you know, that's sometimes it's as common sense and easy to pick as that. Other times it's a bit harder because you can look at the business, you can think, do you know what? I might like that product, or I might think that you can make a go of it. And, you know, we've looked after individuals over time. If they say they're going to do something, they find a way of doing it, and you believe more in them than what they're actually putting forward on paper. So you have a scenario of your heart thinks that they can do it, but your head is like, but what if? So it does take a lot of soul searching and
personal opinion, isn't it?
Lending money is more of an art form than a science, I would suggest. And my wife is in banking as well, which is incredibly dull for our children. But you know, when we're sitting in a restaurant or something, we'll sit there and go, don't see how they can be offering such great food and, you know, at such a price, when you look around the place and think, you know, this must be costing them a fortune in rent, and look how many staff they've got that aren't doing anything. And, you know, you're always looking at these things thinking, well, how does that make money? You know, and more importantly, how does it turn into cash is the key thing. So, yeah, you're always just thinking that through. So when our sons come up with, oh, I've got a great idea for something, and you have to sort of, well, it's either been thought of before or that's not going to make you any money, you know. So it's trying to manage expectations is a good way of describing
it.
It's
part of the job though, isn't it?
I mean, personally,
I do media, and I find myself, every time I'm watching a film, I find myself analysing it over and over and over. So I understand exactly how that feels.
yeah, you have to. I mean, I've looked after people over the years that, you know, have always repaid me. If I looked them in the eye and said, you know, I need to make sure you have £10,000 in the bank account at the end of every month to make that loan repayment, that they would do it. Yet the accounts or financials that they would show me would maybe be, shall we say, geared towards not having to pay any tax. So it's suggesting that they're not actually making any real money. Yet the reality is that they were able to generate money. So not quite as easily done these days, I would suggest.
So what would you? It's always good to ask bank managers about their mistakes. So give us one or two sort of things that have gone wrong in the past without naming names.
Oh, well, I suppose...
Sorry. We haven't got too long, Mark.
if I look at myself, I think a mistake that I made was probably not completing my banking exams when I go back to my very early days, because at the time, my career was moving along reasonably well. I didn't see the banking exams, which were more focused on the what I term the corporate side, the international side, as being relevant to what I was doing on the more personal and small business lending. And so it wasn't of an interest to me, and I wasn't a great sort of academic. I think with hindsight, I should have probably made the effort to do that. So as a lesson for your students. And because, I've learnt the things that I would have probably picked up along the way, but more through actually having to go out and do it and latterly. So I think that was probably a personal mistake of myself. If I look at lending mistakes that have been made, I'm trying to think of
ask you for successes as well in a minute.
That's good to know. I think lending mistakes that I've made, it was probably one company that they were looking to move into bigger premises. We were able to help them do so, but we'd probably underestimated the actual cost of the move in terms of working with them on everything. And it did put a huge amount of pressure on the business for a period of probably about 12 months after they'd moved. And if we'd really challenged the sort of operational logistical costs of what they'd allowed for the cost of the move, would have maybe said you're perhaps stretching this a bit too soon. So I think that was more a combination of everybody was wanting to do the deal. We could see the upside of them moving into bigger premises and what that would do for them. What we'd probably overlooked was just how difficult that transition period from moving the operation from one business, one site, to another site, which was only sort of 10 miles down the road, so staff getting there shouldn't have been an issue, but it turned out it wasn't as good on public transport, so they lost a couple of key staff along the way. There was issue with just the simple logistics of the move, with IT not working to start with. Now, some of this wasn't necessarily the bank's fault, but likewise, we'd probably not challenged as hard on, what's your contingency? What if this doesn't quite work? Everything was probably a bit too fine on, yes, this will work if everything else works. There was probably no contingency.
Probably just poor research and development then, making a decision.
Yeah, I think it was sometimes it's no more than just good old-fashioned common sense and practical experience of, do you know what, if you're running two sites, it's not just two costs going on, it's have you got the people in the right place at the right time? And there were just some amazingly simple things that were overlooked that we didn't think would be a problem, and we thought that the move would happen quicker than it did as well, so... Yeah, that was probably a tough.
You're listening to Business Matters on Radiolab 97.1 FM.
Okay, just to wind up then, what's the sort of decision or business that you're most proud of? You think, yeah, I really got that right. That's really made a difference.
There was a couple of clients that I've looked after over the years that I would as I used to term it, I'd always go into battle for with, you know, if it was that our bank's credit department were taking one view and I could, I felt that wasn't right, and I would try and push the boundaries for them. And there was a client that I looked after on a wholesale business that did go through a very difficult time. They had quite a big amount of obsolete stock they had to move on. They had a very difficult minority shareholder that was causing them problems. They very much operated in a commodity driven area, so price and margin was very, very key for them. And they were in a very difficult space where we were using invoice discounting for them, so their funding was getting quite tight. And there was a view on one part of the credit team that this was a deal that was going to fail. And I fought hard and worked with the client to, you know, put forward scenarios that I thought would work for them, and we were able to assist them. We had to lend them a little bit more money, which is always a difficult one when you're faced, you're looking at something that isn't necessarily working the right way at the moment, and what it actually needs is more money to get it happening.
Yeah.
But we were able to lend them a bit more, and they then delivered on what they said. And afterwards, afterwards, it was probably 6-12 months down the line when they got themselves through this difficult time. You know, we had an unsolicited letter came through just expressing the thanks and, you know, the efforts that we'd gone to. And, you know, and when I left, that was one of my old Barclays customers. And when I left, I had a selection of nice notes and that from people saying how good it had been over the years. But this one stood out in that they said they would always be thankful for me being the bank manager at that time, because they realised. And, you know, and then it sounds a little bit of a cliche, but that was quite a big firm with, you know, only 20, 30 employees. But if that had have fallen over, you know, that was 20, 30 people that would then have been out of work. They might have got other jobs quite soon, I don't know. But you do, when you're dealing with, a typical SME business like that, and, you know, you realise your decision can affect, you know, not just the business, but the people that, when you go and see them, they're always saying hello, making you a cup of tea when you get there, and how's things, and all this sort of thing. You get to know them as well. And then when you think, if I haven't been able to pay your wages because the bank, the company hasn't got the money to do so, that's Joe down in the loading bay who's going to be suffering there. Yeah. So, you know, that's quite...
It's certainly in my experience, on the other side of the fence, so much of it is down to personal relationships. I've been finance director of a company, which real white knuckle ride as to whether we could pay the wages at the end of a month or something. And sometimes I was phoning up the manager saying, look, give me another £1 million facility for the next 2 days. It was complicated with the timing of receipts from customers, but do that. He said, yeah, that's fine, you know, but just keep that under the radar. We'll do that, you know, I'll do you a favour, Steve, you know, that sort of thing. And that, you know, that
and that's help, where
helps you sleep at night when you're not sleeping at night, because, you know, it is very, very hairy.
And I think that's where, you know, the personal relationships do come into it. So that company that I mentioned were, you know, I got on well with them as individuals, respected them, you know, but it wasn't always just a positive relationship all the time. You know, we had to have difficult conversations, but we had an open relationship. They would share the numbers with me and explain what was going on. So I always felt I'd got good insight into the business when someone won't actually let you have any information or the account, you know, well, why do you want to see that? Well, if I'm lending you some money, I think I do need to see
that.
And
I think that's a good point to end, because for me, I think it is about being open, you know, treating the relationship with the bank manager as very much a bit of a partnership, really. It's not quite that, but yeah, being open and transparent on information and good. It's easy to give the information in the good times, but it's the bad times when you need
it's
when,
a two-way
when the relationship
street.
Is tested.
Yeah,
and it does make a difference. It does make a difference.
Definitely.
Right. Well, on that we will end. I'd like to thank everybody for coming today. Really appreciate that. Big thanks to Phil Bidwell for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
This will be available on a podcast shortly, I'm sure. And it's good to know that we're working on a potential relationship with a community radio in Bedford, which I was just looking at before we did this session, to extend our network even further.
Fantastic.
That's end it there.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.